At an earlier lecture, I talked about something that I didn't know what to call, namely persecution or tension or sufferings. It all depends on the point of view. Today I want to speak about the same phenomenon looked at from two angles particularly. First, the difference between the period of the Commonwealth, and second, that is, and the period of the monarchy. There is a change in the relationship between the state and the Quakers in that period. And what I have to say today overlaps a good deal the material in two of the chapters in Russell's book. The fifth chapter, which is in, it was in last week's reading, and the ninth chapter, I think, which is in this week's reading. He has two chapters, one on persecution under the Commonwealth and persecution under the monarchy. So I've arranged what I have on the board in this general, these two sections here. And in these two columns, I've indicated the things that happened in favor of the Quakers, and the second column, the last column, the things that happened not in favor of the Quakers. So now I have one column I haven't room for, which is the contemporary episodes which affected the Quakers, not due to government intervention. Not a very long list, as you see. This has a date. In other words, what you have on the board is the fact that there was no official action either for or against the Quakers centrally. But in this period of the monarchy, there were actions, and these are on the part of the king in their favor. And these are on the part of the government, the parliament, against them. These are all acts, you see, official acts. This one, by the way, is both the king and the parliament agreed. Now, the Quakers responded rather differently to these two periods, in these two periods of history. They were, in general, a law-abiding people, and during the time of the Commonwealth, although they were frequently in trouble, they were not subject to national, recognized hostility. Matter of fact, Cromwell, you know, was rather in sympathy with the Quakers. And the others in power, the Puritans and the Nonconformists, who had so much influence in this period, were also somewhat in sympathy with the Quakers. The trouble they had was from local sources, and that was couldn't be cured centrally, and therefore the Cromwell couldn't do very much about it. Cromwell was, I think, in favor of toleration, to a degree of toleration, the Quakers. And I think the same may be said of the kings. I think Charles II and James II, though for different reasons from Cromwell, were quite anxious that Quakers shouldn't be molested. But they couldn't do anything about it. And Cromwell couldn't do much. As a matter of fact, Parliament, such as it was, had the whip hand as far as this was concerned. And it was due to Parliament that say that some of the abuses against the Quakers were not repealed and prevented, both in the Commonwealth period and under the kings. There was need of money for the government, and that could only be gotten through parliamentary votes, and that meant that that even Cromwell and certainly the kings had to let the parliament play the tune. It's the other way around. He that plays the piper plays the tune. The parliament, which had the money, could prevent any liberal feeling on the part of the government in this matter. Under Cromwell, there were no specific legislation against the Quakers, and they were locally harassed by the use and misuse of general laws on the statute books that were not passed against them particularly, but had come down and could be applied. Such laws as the requirement of an oath of allegiance, the old laws of requirement of attendance at worship, the law again of an oath renouncing the papacy, and laws about blasphemy or about vagrants. These were all laws which were applied in this period, as Russell made quite clear to you, I think, in the chapter that you had last week. Now, when the king came in, the parliament, under the leadership of Lord Clarendon, the Earl of Clarendon, Edward Hyde, took a stiff line against all the dissenters. And these laws, which I have on the board, along with others which didn't affect the Quakers quite so directly, were part of a code of laws to compel conformity of the whole English people during this period. I think I mentioned to you the other day that in 1662, all clergymen, of course this wouldn't affect Quakers, all clergymen who wouldn't subscribe to the use of the prayer book in their worship were fired from their pulpits, and others were put in their place. This interesting event in history has just been celebrated by the Nonconformists of England 300 years after this last year. And there were other laws that affected other nonconformists. These laws that I put on the board, the three, affected the Quakers. One is called the Quaker Act. It was to forbid anybody saying that it was unlawful for a Christian to take an oath. And of course, the Quakers not only said that, but practiced that, and that was one way they got into trouble. And then the Conventicle Acts. Conventicle, it means an occasion of worship, not legitimate. And since only the Anglican or Episcopal type of worship was legitimate, all dissenters, if they attempted to hold their own manner of worship, were guilty under the Conventicle Act. It was a pretty severe act. It required imprisonment, first offense and the second offense, third offense, and of course they knew when they passed the law that these people were not going to obey it, so they provided for first, second, third, and fourth offenses. And the third offense, if they broke the law, they would be deported from the kingdom. The West Indies, or the American colonies, was the usual place of deportation. That's an old law, as you know, an old type of law. You may remember that 100 years ago, the criminals in England were deported to Australia. And if you want to know it, the criminals in England were deported to America. So some of us, I suppose, are descended from deported criminals. Quakers or other criminals, I'll say. Actually, there wasn't too much deportation of Quakers. But this is the law. On the fourth offense, if they came back after being deported, was that they should be executed. You may remember that in New England, they had a similar, more severe law, even under the Commonwealth period, when they drove people out and drove them out a second time and cut their ears off the third time and executed them the fourth time. Only in England, more Quakers got back, namely four, to be executed than ever got back, in New England, than ever got back to England to be executed. So that was a slight difference. It's interesting, I don't know that I brought this out, but I talked about the way the New England people behaved up in Massachusetts and Plymouth Colony, that being so far from England, they could defy the government of Cromwell, of the Commonwealth, and even the government of the king. I've sometimes thought that the American Revolution had its roots in the fact that New England got mad at the home government because the home government tried to prevent them, and finally did prevent them, from executing any more Quakers. If you want to know where the American Revolution began, it began there. For one thing, you heard about the Stamp Act, the Tea Party, and some other things, but this is 100 years and more before. This is only one of the things in this century that made the New Englanders a little mad and ready to behave as they did in the next century. Well, now, these Conventicle Acts forbade more than five Quakers, adult Quakers, meeting together for any purpose. You never could tell whether Quakers were in worship or not. Nothing you could tell by. There wasn't any hourglass, there wasn't any surplice, there wasn't any pulpit. And therefore, the simplest thing was if five Quakers were met together, you just assumed it was breaking the law against worship not according to the Church of England. And the fact that they said nothing didn't prevent them from being arrested either. That law expired in 69, I guess it was, and it was renewed in 1670. Though when it was renewed, the penalties weren't quite so serious. In 1664, there were a few cases, a couple of hundred, of Quakers that had broken it three times, and therefore were subject to deportation. And not many of them were actually deported for this very good reason, that to be deported you have to persuade a shipmaster to take an Englishman away from his home. No matter what the laws were, there were non-Quaker shipmasters that found that very difficult to obey. A few were actually transported. Jamaica, I think, mostly Barbados. I don't know of any in the mainland. Virginia was another colony where they could have been taken.